Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to episode 10 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Okay, I have to say, we're in episode 10. I can't believe we're in the double digits.
I mean, it was bound to happen eventually.
Well, 10 does come after 9.
Are you going to announce it when we're in our teens? We're officially hitting puberty
because
this
week. Welcome to episode 10. We are, I guess, 10 weeks old. Because we've done...
We are 10 weeks old.
We are 10 weeks old. How is that in the progression of a human? We're not quite...
10 weeks?
Yeah.
Like, in utero or like
no,
outside?
Born. In the air.
In the air?
Breathing air.
I would like to point out that Ginger obviously has no children.
In the air? Breathing air? In the outside world.
I mean, are they like balloons? You have them tied up at the ankles and they float? I mean, what?
No, just on 3 days. I mean, Sundays.
No. So, announcements this week. We had several castings that were announced. We had Rupert, which is Grant O'Rourke. I think he was teased as being cast as Rupert for a few weeks. I feel like I've seen his picture, his headshot floating around, but with no concrete mentioning of what he was cast as. I feel like I've seen his picture.
I don't know if I saw his picture floating around, but I think, I don't know how well you could see it, but there was a picture of someone hugging someone else.
Oh, you know who. Or you're just trying to be like...
No, was it Ron?
No.
Well, so I'm saying, who was it?
It was McTavish.
Oh, see, I forget what
McTavish
it was.
McTavish and some woman.
So Dougal.
Yes.
Okay, so Dougal, character...
With all the headshots on the wall behind him?
Yes.
Yeah.
And people were blowing that up to try and look at different
things.
They
must have super fancy computers, because every time I tried to blow the picture up, everyone in the background became so pixelated that I couldn't even tell who they were.
But I think after the fact, you can go back and you can tell from a distance, of course, which one is Grant O'Rourke.
Well, I feel like I've seen that headshot before, and I don't think it was from that. I think that there was some speculation that he was cast as something. Mm. And that someone, I think...
And his dimples.
Did think that...
He's very
did
cute.
Think that he was being cast as Rupert, but it was official.
And also, there's one, I think a still shot from the video, from the behind the scenes. There's a lineup of men and someone standing in front of them, and one of the guys in the lineup in costume is Grant. That may have been where you saw him.
I don't think so. Okay. No, I remember seeing that specific
headshot. Okay.
Yeah. Also this week, we saw Mrs. Graham and Mrs. Baird cast. They were cast almost simultaneously, at least announced.
Yeah, pretty much, I think, in the same, like a dual announcement or something.
That is, Tracy Wilkinson was cast as Mrs. Graham, and Catherine Howden was cast as Mrs. Baird. Now, both of them appear to have relatively prolific... We'll just say it's lengthy.
Yeah.
Lengthy and full of BBC. Which is not, by any means, a bad thing. I love the BBC.
BBC is great.
I wish we got more than just BBC America.
Yeah.
I'd like to get BBC One, BBC Two, BBC Three. However many there are, I want them all.
And then, those were the official cast announcements.
You know, and this next one caused some consternation with Outlander fans everywhere. Like, all over Twitter and everything. And it was like, it was Grant's representation.
I believe so. Or management, yes.
Management company.
Culturemanagement.com,
like,
something
on
like
their
that.
Website, they were announcing, hey, look, our dudes got cast in this show. And then underneath it, they have a picture of some chick. And it says, oh, and this woman was cast as Dolina. And everyone's like, who's Dolina? I've read the book several times and I couldn't figure out who that was.
I I cannot tell you how many times and in how many different places I saw people asking, who the freak is Dolina?
Right.
Because if the entire, maybe not every single Outlander fan, maybe many fans have read the books once. Maybe. Okay, fair enough. You're still a fan. You can be a fan. But so many fans have read these books so many times, multiple times, that I think if someone knew of Dolina, someone would have come out and said, oh, you guys, simmer down now. It was this person in this part, or whatever, if there were truly a Dolina. Well, but didn't even Diana come out and say, number one, she said that there was no Dolina in the books, right?
Correct. Well, also, I would like to say that if there was a Dolina, I would remember that name because it's Dolina. That would be a memorable stick-out name to me.
Probably.
But I know that there was a Q&A yes. with one of the...
Tallship Productions, the Twitter account, did a
so
quick...
So she did a Q&A, and somebody mm-hmm. asked her about who yes. is Dolina, and she was like, please don't worry about it, it's yes. just a bit player.
It's a minor part.
It's a minor part.
And I wouldn't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So as far as we're concerned...
I mean, are they naming all the minor parts?
Who knows?
But as far as we're... going to have Crofter number one, Crofter number two.
As far as we're concerned, we're not concerned.
No,
and
not
if there,
I just think it's funny.
It's very funny, but the reaction, not that this person was chosen, has nothing to do
no,
with the
she's
woman.
She's very pretty.
It's just people were so confused because it didn't warrant a true announcement because no. nothing came
well,
out
it
by...
Well, it didn't get an announcement.
That's what I'm saying. It didn't warrant an announcement by Starz because it didn't get one, therefore it didn't warrant it. But it did warrant one, and maybe rightly so, by her management, because that's what the management people want yeah. to do. However, oh my gosh, it was almost, and I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit, I don't know if I'd say I was concerned, but I was perplexed. And so it was at least a day, maybe 2 days, that people kind of...
It didn't go away.
No, it didn't go away.
It kind of kept... like being reborn. Like it was like it was cyclical. Like it would kind of die down a little bit and then it would pop back up again and
it was like, don't worry, and then but don't worry. Well but
well I think that the worry that people were having was that this was the first noticeable addition
true
to the script or to the story that we've
that's
come
true.
In contact with. So everyone's like, wait a minute, you're adding
that's
somebody?
That's true.
And it's enough to take away because you have to cut for content, but to start adding things, I think they start to get nervous.
That's true. It wasn't just who the heck is it? It's, oh, that's, if it's a new person, then that gets us into the territory of, okay, what have they changed? Or what have they added and how have they added it to what storyline, to what scene? However, we have to remember, the only thing we've seen thus far, and we don't know how it's going to change. The only change that's been announced has been the expanded role right. of Angus Vohr. That's the only thing we know, but at least Angus existed.
Well, I think that my main concern with it was more to the fact of what did they have to cut to make room for Dolina?
Well, you could look at it that way. And I know we don't know exactly who she is yet. Minor role, whatever. We don't know whom she plays. But there was, again, totally all...
Well, technically, there are all kinds of characters that are just like Crofter's wife.
Exactly. Whether it's a Crofter's wife. What I'm trying to say is whether she plays a singer, whether she plays a Crofter's wife, whether she plays a woman who has, you know, three lines as on the, along the side of the road or in a village somewhere. But I think, yes, the first concern was what did they change or what do they have to change or add or take away to have this character added. But what I'm thinking, and I, again, like always, could be wrong, I'm not choosing to look at it like that. I am wondering which character already existed, like Tallship
morphed together.
Exactly.
To create...
It's some woman who lived two crofts down.
Right.
Who had three kids or seven kids and one on the way. That was never named.
Well, maybe it's just a character that they gave a name to so that when Claire talks to her, Claire didn't look like she didn't know who she was.
Sure. And it could be someone in the castle.
It could be somebody who comes to the surgery and...
That's true.
And she just names her and says, oh, well, keep a good eye on that foot, Dolina.
She could be one of the maids.
She could be.
She could be a maid that Mrs. Fitz, you know, addresses.
She looks a little old in the tooth to be one of the girls long that was sent. Long in the tooth. Whatever.
No, she may have not been one of the young Merry Maids, but maids...
The Merry Maids.
They were called... She called them Merry Maids.
I know.
She may not have been one of the Merry Maids, but serving women
for all ages. I was just stating that Mrs. Fitz sent down what appeared to be girls to clean the surgery.
I would have guessed they were young as well. So we have the... entrance, at least into our vocabulary and Outlanderverse now, of Delina. Whoever you are, Delina, God bless you. We welcome you, and we look forward to seeing you, whoever you are.
So it's been relatively quiet on the Outlander Star's Instagram?
Pretty much.
We haven't had a lot, not since the Big Sam reveal, Sam is Jamie reveal.
Yeah.
There was a big pause after that. Like, they were like, okay,
I think we needed
enjoy
a pause.
This.
We needed a pause.
I know.
I still go look at that every once in a while, probably every few days, and then just take a moment. But yes, we did need a little bit of a break.
Right. But it was kind of quiet on there since Jamie was posted, and they posted, I believe, one more picture this week.
I thought it was
on Halloween.
Two.
It was like, it was a well-timed Halloween posting.
Yes, one was on Halloween, and it was a picture of a skull and a jar of what said pigeon blood.
It was a picture of a drawing of a skull.
Ah.
Kind of an ornate, it looked like there was some other stuff going on in the picture, but then it was like a vial, like a little bottle, little stoppered bottle of
pigeon blood.
Was
there something else, like a pen? I don't know, I seem to remember three things. Like there was a skull and a jar and a something, and I'm not sure what the something was, but... Anyway, it was a kind of a haunting picture, and rightly so, for Halloween. And didn't they wish us Happy Halloween or
I'm sure
something
that was
like that?
The whole purpose of the picture. But they were saying it was Happy Halloween from Gellis and Claire.
From Gellis and Claire. Yeah, there we go.
And then there was a picture. When did the picture of the sword get posted? Was it today or yesterday?
I want to say today, but it could have been yesterday. It was in the last 24 hours, I believe.
And I think it was posted along with the question of who do you think will wield this sword? And I definitely think
it's a Highlander or a redcoat.
It's definitely going to be a redcoat because that does not look like a broadsword at all.
No, and I also put that's
or like a menacing.
The Outlander podcast does have an Instagram account. It is as of yet still empty, and we have no idea when it will be filled with images. However, we do like to be able to follow others and comment and like others. So if you would like to follow us, we are happy to follow back. But all this to say, we did comment on that.
The sword
image. And that's exactly what I said. I said, I'm hoping for a Highlander, but I'm fearing it's a red coat. I think it's a red coat too.
I think for sure it's a red coat because it doesn't strike me as the type of sword that the Highlanders would use. They wouldn't have anything. I wouldn't see them with anything that ornate. I see them with more like claymores, like big, lengthy, brutish-looking weapons. That was very refined and prissy.
It just looked a little, I don't know about prissy, but very, yeah, kind of, not that there weren't skilled craftsmen among Highlanders, but that's, without doing any research whatsoever, and I am not even a fake expert on anything sword-related, but just looking at it, I thought it looked too fancy for a Highlander. Too well-made. Not that they didn't have good...
blacksmiths?
Yeah, not that they didn't have good craftsmen, but it looked too fine, I guess. Someone on the... Either on the stars in the comments of the photo on Instagram or somewhere else on Twitter, but someone, a commenter, mentioned that many times... If it was a Highland sword, that there would have been the clan's name engraved somewhere in the basket. But
I mean, that's way too much thought into it. I just think it looks a little too fussy and a little too prissy for the hyper masculine Scotsman of these books.
And we also, although we have had access to some version of something for quite a while, Stars did officially release the 25-minute long video on YouTube that included the behind-the-scenes reel and the entire Q&A panel from Comic-Con in New York.
From Comic-Con, not the
fan
lunch.
Event.
Not
no,
fan event.
Not the lunch. Just the... I watched most of it this evening. And I have to say, again, every time I watch that reel, that set of anything, one of those Comic-Con videos, I seem to see a different thing each time or see more each time. And I'm thankful now that they've released this, that there's no, I love the screaming, I love the intensity, I love the fans. We are two screaming, silly fans. But it was nice to see it without all the screaming in it. And I know there has been a version that has been around as well. But this was the official panel with the entire behind the scenes at the top. And when they showed, and we have no idea, this is going to be the official like intro to all the episodes. But when they showed just those hill shots and that music and the words Outlander coming on the screen, I got teary again. I was like, are you kidding me? This is not even a picture of Jamie. This is not even an episode. And I can't even like watch the behind the scenes intro to say welcome to Ron when he comes on the screen. I mean, I'm sorry. Wow.
This just goes to further illustrate.
We will be watching
how
this
much
alone.
More emotional about pretty much everything Ginger is than Summer.
Thank you for saying that.
I mean, no, it's the truth.
It's neither good nor bad nor here nor there.
Is.
It just is. And I definitely wear my heart on my sleeve more. And show emotion more. Not that you don't have. You're not frigid.
Good.
I mean, you're not cold. You don't show emotion as easily.
I wouldn't say that I'm not easily moved. I'm just not moved by that. I'm moved by different things.
What is one thing you're moved by?
I can't get through, and this is totally not related to Outlander, but I can't get through a single episode of Parenthood without crying at some point.
Yeah, but that's deep. I mean, that stuff is...
That's a parent thing. I don't know. It's
I can understand that.
I can totally relate to a lot
of
those.
On the same note, I cannot get through The Last Unicorn without crying.
She never could. I want to point that out.
I still, even as a child, as an 8-year-old, I would hide under a blanket and cry, but I'd still watch it. You remember.
I remember. So basically what this tells me is that...
We're watching
you
it
are,
alone.
No, well, that's a given, but you are obviously moved by animated animals.
Oh.
And I am emotionally moved by the plight of parenthood.
I'm very moved by music and landscapes as well, and by musicals.
All right, so this week's read along, before we start, I want to just say that Ginger took notes, which is fine. She always takes notes. But she actually slid them in front of me, and she, like, I'm supposed to look at them. And I look down, and I'm like, yeah, I can't read that.
So.
It's like some kind of weird shorthand looking. No, I'm sure they're all words.
They are words.
English words?
Yeah, most of it.
I mean, I think I can make out the word Claire there.
There's a lot of Claire and Colm and Jamie. I think I wrote one German word.
On purpose?
Yes, on purpose. I take notes in, like, three languages.
Who does that?
So chapter 8.
Chapter 8.
An evening's entertainment. The nice thing about this chapter is that although it was similar in length to the last one, it was a little bit easier to follow. And for the purposes of taking notes or the purposes of getting ready to discuss it, because I didn't feel like I had a list of individual things that happened.
Well, I think that this chapter, while I agree is similar in length, it was... not as full of minute details as the previous chapter was. The last chapter was very, like, medical-driven, like, medical paraphernalia-driven.
But that's what we said also, is that that's what we love about Diana.
Of course.
Because she is, oh, my goodness. She's queen of dialogue and queen of storyline and queen of character, but also queen of research and just description.
Agreed. But... the chapters that are heavier in the research aspect of it and lighter on the story aspect of it, I take a longer time to read because I want to make sure that I'm processing it.
Absolutely.
So because this one was really a more story-driven chapter as opposed to historically accurate, detailed-driven chapter, I felt like it was a much swifter read, this chapter.
Yes. So this chapter begins with Claire... speaking with Colm again, or seeing Colm first, and basically giving us, the reader, the name of his disease. And that is Toulouse-Lautrec syndrome. I know I think we may have briefly mentioned it before, but at that point we didn't officially know it, but now she mentions it and describes how she knows it. And she also mentions remembers its symptoms and or effects, and kind of not pins them on Colm, but recognizes a lot of them in him. And one of the ones that she remembers was impotence, or typically impotent. And then she remembers that he had a son.
Well, I think that more important than the impotence would be the sterility. I mean, I think they go hand in hand.
Yes, she said sterility and sometimes impotence. And so then she remembers that he had a son and wonders about Hamish and whether or not he's Colm's. And then Claire is invited by Colm down into the hall to listen to some music. And while she's there, when she goes to see Colm, he offers her wine. And what is the wine that he...
Rhenish.
Rhenish. And we find out from Jamie later on in the chapter that it's his strong wine
that he drinks that he uses, to go to sleep at night.
That helps him with his pain, I guess, or his... Yeah, it helps him sleep.
Which to me indicates, because he poured her several glasses, that he was trying to get her snockered. So maybe she would
talk
more and open up about where she's from, who mm-hmm. she really is, and things like that. So it was more of a
tactic?
Yeah. More of a tactic than a hey, let's drink, let's be friends.
That's true. And even though she was seeming a little bit fuzzy towards the time when Jamie took the cup away from her, she held her own pretty well for a lady of that time. Maybe backwards. Lady heard it.
Well, the thing is she's always drinking. Like,
that's true.
She's, you know, and usually it's not wine. Usually she's going for, you know, the whiskey. Mm-hmm. So she's into the harder stuff anyway. So I think a little wine, strong though it may be, probably is nothing to her. And I don't mean she's a raging alcoholic by any means. I'm just saying she likes her whiskey.
Well, I think there is definitely evidence for what you suggested as far as it being a tactic, because as soon as they start drinking, Colm starts asking her about her French relatives.
Right.
And they speak a little bit, and she says, well, speaking of them, I would really like to get back to them. And he says, oh, yes, well, it'll be a little while, and we have plenty of time until the fall weather makes the channel too dangerous to cross. But if you would like to make it happen a little bit sooner, you could always give me the names of your relatives in France. So she was like, touche, Colm, touche. And
then she excused herself, I think.
Yes, she wanted to go. She said, use the facilities. And as she came back, she came in the opposite side of the hall. And that was kind of where she saw Lyra first, right? Lyra? Because she sees her and she
tries to kind of draw her into conversation. Yes. Like, I don't think she feels a kinship with her, maybe she just feels sorry for her. I don't know. But for whatever reason, she is like hell bent on talking to her and like interacting with her. Maybe, I don't know exactly.
So she ends up on a bench.
She'll regret it later.
Sitting next to Jamie and Lyra.
She sits next to Lyra, or I don't even know if they're sitting yet. She's talking to her. Mm-hmm. And then Jamie comes in, and then I think Claire, trying to matchmake, poorly might I add, kind of calls him over and tries to, you know, manufacture a conversation between he and Lyra. Mm-hmm. And then I think everything starts to, you know, the whole entertainment begins. And so she's like, oh, well, let's all sit together. And, like, sits Jamie in between them, I believe, one on another side of him. And that works for all of about, you know, one entertainment thing, one number, one song or whatever is going on. And then Jamie moves over so that he's sitting on the other side and displaces Lyra further down the...
And isn't that also when he takes the wine from her? When they switch places, or...
I think he takes it from her because she almost spills it before he takes it.
Okay, so he ends up... It ends up being Jamie, Claire, Lyra, right? Sitting on the bench or sitting in the place.
Right, and it's under the guise that he's going to translate.
Well, and also so she can see, I think.
Well, so she can see, and also he was like, and then I'll whisper the translation in your ear. He's going to... Translate the Gaelic.
So he's...
Or the Gaelic, excuse me.
He is interpreting for her, or he's going to, and he starts to tell her, well, the English version of this tale. A lot of the tales that evening were of fairies or the wee folk, right? And the one that captured her attention was the one where a man's wife went missing, wife and baby went missing near...
A fairy hill, right?
I don't know if it said fairy hill, but near a dune or a dun, near some stones. And the man couldn't find the woman or the woman's child, brought a priest to the site. The priest blessed the rocks and sprinkled holy water on them. The moon came out from behind a cloud and shone upon the woman and the child. And she lay there exhausted on the ground as though she had traveled far. She did not know where she'd been nor how she'd come there. This made the hair on Claire's arms stand up. Claire was probably feeling freaked out by this. And she noticed, not only from this story, but over all the tales that had been told, that she noticed a pattern with how they were beginning the stories. Instead of once upon a time, what were they saying?
200 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Almost something like, it was a time 200 years ago. And she also noticed that women, and she wondered if it was only or always women, but women came back.
Well, it was always stories of women disappearing. So she wondered if it was only women who were travelers. Yes. She's calling them travelers.
But she also noticed that they came back. Or some came back. And this resolved her yet again. She's having at least once a chapter, once every other chapter, somehow this is pulled in. The reader is let in on her mind that the reader is reminded. She's resolved to go back to those stones. And now that she hears in a tale, yeah, it's just a fairy tale. But she hears it and she puts two and two together with at least her experience and the number of years that she went back and the fact that these people were coming back. And she signals in on, okay, it's 200 years.
It's possible.
It's possible, exactly.
I think coming out of that reverie that she was having is when she almost spilled her drink.
Jamie does not let her finish the rest of the wine. Not only did he put Claire between himself and Leora, which definitely would have made her a little tweaked, he also, after saying to Claire, actually, he finishes the wine, right? And he gives the glass to Leora without glancing at her. And I thought, oh, Jamie.
He's like, yeah, you take care of this.
See you later.
He's like, I'm going to go take this lady to her room.
Exactly.
Get rid of my cup.
Exactly. And so Jamie walks her to her bedchamber and surprises her by following her in and closing the door behind
taking
him.
Taking her shirt off.
And she's like, what the what? And then she realizes, oh, okay, that's true. I'm a healer.
But what's so funny to me, and this is just how our brains are different from Claire's brains, is that he comes in behind her and she does have that instant of what the what. But when he starts to take his shirt off, she immediately goes, oh, it's his shoulder. I would not have immediately been like, oh, he must want me to look at his like shoulder. I'd have been like, what's going on? Hey.
And she removes the dressing, which she had been meaning to do for 2 days.
Which he left on, even though it was like rubbing him raw. Like he said that he was rubbing him raw. And he was like, he said that he left it on because he was afraid he was going to get in trouble. That she was going to, because she'd threatened to whack him or whatever when she was applying it, that he was afraid to take it off without her.
And Jamie mentions that the reason that he did not want her to take his shirt off, basically, right, back at the stables, was that old Alec knew that he had been beaten, right? Knew that he had been flogged, but had not seen his scars. And he spoke very eloquently about there being a difference between knowing something as a fact and knowing something for yourself that you've seen. And they had a very, very deep, touching moment, I thought, there. So he's here exposed. She had just done his dressing, and she's looking at his back as he's telling her this. And she sees, again, looks deeper at his scars and notices that, yes, some of them were pretty well healed, but there were some deep ones still that, I mean, just the depth that they were quite deep. And she started to understand why he maybe didn't want Alec to have seen them.
He didn't want to be pitied.
Exactly.
That was the bottom line.
Exactly.
He didn't want his opinion of him to change.
Exactly.
He wanted to still continue to be treated the way that he had been always been treated by old Alec. He didn't want to be treated lesser or to be basically pitied, I think it's mm-hmm. that.
And he tells Claire, the reason that it's okay between them is because you have a way of letting me know you're sorry that it happened, but you don't treat me
differently. Right.
And I thought that was very insightful of him. And
well, you think about
it. They had
though.
A moment, yeah.
I mean, as bad as it is, she has seen worse.
Yes, and she talks about that. Talks about rumors she had heard about what had happened to others during the war. She personally has seen worse in the war, but she had also heard of rumors of worse.
Correct.
Claire then goes to bed, and the next scene is the next day. And she starts to explore the castle a little bit. And I'm going to go for a walk in the castle. And she stumbles upon an alcove, which seems to have no purpose, which was kind of an interesting way to describe it. It was just put there as a place in the wall,
like a
or
filler.
Something. Yeah. And
they're like, too small for a room. We're just going to put a curtain over it.
And she sees a flash of white in a space between the wall and the curtain, or the edge of the opening and the curtain.
Right.
And she notices, and it kind of catches her eye, and she stops, and she notices that it's Jamie with... Now, the person is not named. I looked at this. We know it's Lyra, but the person is not named.
No, but...
But she's blonde.
She's described enough.
She's described
that you
enough.
Know who it
and
is.
You, yeah, you know it's Lyra, but...
can we just say that he is, like, the king of mixed signals?
Like, This was a little bit redonkulous, Jamie, because he... Exactly. He goes, I don't want to say above and beyond... But he is very adamant when old Alec says something about, or even Claire. They have both remarked upon the fact that Lyra definitely has feelings for him or definitely likes him. And the fact that he took a beating for her will mean something to her.
Correct.
Regardless of what Jamie intends it to be, she will take meaning from it, whether it's there or not. And Jamie...
Everyone took meaning from it. Well, okay,
Except for him. But
maybe the next time he takes a beating, he needs to step forward and be like, this means nothing to me. I want everyone to know. I just really like being beaten.
I may kiss her 3 times in 2 days, but it means nothing. It
means nothing.
So here he is beforehand saying, look, I knew it was going to be hard for her, so I did it out of the goodness of his heart. But he did it because he wanted to save her pain, which is very noble of him. But he sat there, or stood there probably, and said, I don't like her in that way. I felt sorry for her. And then he ends up with her in his lap, getting his smooch on in an alcove.
Worse than that, though.
And then, hold on, he makes eye contact with her.
No, let's go back.
And then repositions her and goes in for more.
Let's go back for a second. We can come back to that. But even to more of the fact, when Claire calls Jamie over earlier in the chapter and they start talking... He's like, oh, I was here before. And she was like, he's like, you probably don't remember me. And there he goes, oh, I remember you, blah, blah, blah. I was like, it was like, you know, 8 or something like that. And he was like, she was like, do you remember me? And he's like, oh, no, but I wouldn't have, you know, a lad of like 16 year old wouldn't have any notice of babies basically calling her like a
bairn. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, so he pretty much like that whole scene before they're kissing in the alcove together, the last time you see them together, he's doing nothing but like pushing her away.
Yeah, definitely.
With words and actions, just pushing her away. So when they have that whole alcove scene, and now he's pulling her closer and kissing her, you're just like, what?
I cannot remember how I felt about the first time I read this, but I would have gotten mixed signals, right? As a reader, I would have said, okay, he doesn't like her. There's some kind of strain or tension between him and Claire, but he's saying he doesn't like Lyra. He took a beating for her, but he's telling people, okay, so maybe I'll go give him the benefit of the doubt. He doesn't care for her in that way. But now he's kissing her and he's giving Claire a challenge with his eyes. I mean, it didn't make sense.
Well, I think when you start reading a book and you are introduced to characters, until you're told otherwise, you take them at their word. And he had a lot of words and all of them were,
no.
I'm not interested.
But his actions, I'm sorry, actions speak louder than words.
They do, but...
That's why it's so difficult to look at these two, his words and his actions, because he's repeatedly told, different people say to him, you know she likes you. You know this will mean more to her than what it means to you. And he stubbornly refuses to accept that, or just is blind, or doesn't admit it, or whatever. If we say, okay, we still believe him, then it was really not kind of him to sit there and give her kisses. Because that was...
She probably cornered him.
She may have, but it still was not right of him.
No, I don't...
She didn't know. I think it was not fair.
I think that knowing that, especially from everyone else continually telling him... Mm-hmm. Knowing that it meant more to her than to him, he should not have pursued that.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Then we're in agreement.
So she sees that, and then she walks off. The next scene, or the next time they're together, is at the dinner table, and she sits, she's across from Jamie, I think, and old Alec is at the table.
She's within stomping distance.
That's true. So
or footsie distance.
I didn't remark what she said. Oh, she remarks on his, something like,
you said your mouth is
rather swollen, Jamie. Did you get hit by a horse? Or maybe he was the one who said that. But he said, yes, it was a horse hit in the face or hit in the mouth by a horse. A horse who swung her head or his head when he wasn't looking.
And she made some comment about a spirited filly.
Yes. And old Alec said, what are you doing with fillies? Are you... So, and then old Alec is going on about, like, how stupid can you be? You've been around horses. I thought you knew better. Blah, 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 blah. And he just doesn't, the whole time he does not stop till the end of the meal. Meanwhile, as a warning, what does Jamie do to Claire?
He definitely...
Besides staring her down.
He steps on her foot. Like, he doesn't, like, lightly stomp on it. But he's like, he definitely puts pressure on it to let her know.
That look.
Don't do this.
Yeah, do not stop where you are.
Just, this is your warning. And then I honestly think old Alec kept talking so that she wouldn't be able to. And to kind of draw attention away from the implication of what she was saying.
Exactly. But at what point? So first he puts his foot on her like as a warning. Like, look, I'm here. I'm going to hurt you if you do something more. Mm-hmm. But then she says something else and he actually doesn't stomp on it, but he does put more pressure on it. There's a step in there.
I think the first one was when he mentions... The horse. When she mentions his mouth being swollen.
Oh.
And then I think... When she mentions the spirited filly, I think he applies
that was
pressure.
Were a little pressure. So then Alec is going on and going on and going on
until Jamie finally leaves.
Jamie's like enough, and his ears get red. And he flushes.
I think he said that's the only thing that quieted old Alec was his leaving.
And then when they were finishing up, old Alec basically let on that he knew what they were talking about,
and he says you shouldn't tease him so.
Don't tease him like that. And he said, don't tease him so because. And this is why I think you're right about him going on and on so that they couldn't go on, is that if her dad finds out,
right,
there could be a lot worse to him that could happen than a beating. And Claire says, like, kind of jokingly, what, a wife?
Yeah.
And Alec is like, well, yeah, because...
Well, not only that, but he's not a catch.
That's true.
To parents. He's an outlaw. He's got a price in his head. He is not a desirable son-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
He can't really provide anything but himself to whoever he marries at this point. So there's that. That's an issue. And then also the fact that, the whole, he said you could also have, if that's the case, they could marry him to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he states that she is not the wife for him because she's a girl who will always be a girl.
Even when she's 50.
Even when she's 50, she'll still be a girl.
And that Jamie needs a woman.
Correct.
And the thing that I understood, I believe, the gist, but I still don't know exactly what was going to be said or meant to be said. He says, Jamie needs a woman, not a girl. And he says, I was wed to a woman and I know the difference. And he looks at Claire and says, and so do you. Did he mean to imply that Claire knows the difference between a woman and a girl? Or also the fact that Jamie needs a woman, not a girl? And by that, was he inferring or letting her know that he knew she had feelings for him? I was a little bit lost on that.
She is lost on that, and it is kind of confusing. But even Claire's confused by it. She didn't...
Exactly.
And maybe Diana... I'm not sure Diana knows what he meant by it.
Diana knows everything about what she wrote.
But there was no further description given on that. It was like he said it and left, and it just, like, dropped the bomb and walked away.
And that was it.
And that was the end of the chapter. So for next week's read-along, we're reading Chapter 9, and the title of that one is The Gathering. So I hope you all do your reading and join us back next week. So I guess that wraps up this episode of the Outlander podcast, this 10th episode of Outlander podcast.
Double digits.
Our first decade.
Our first decade of weeks, we can say.
There you go.
Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/OutlanderPod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.